on land transaction, briefing, public hearing, and a decision. Put her on fast track, Julie. Thank you.
I'll whoosh right through this.
Oh, too easy.
Okay, good morning, Chairman, Commission members, and Director Unsworth. My name is Julie Sandberg. I'm with the Real Estate Services Program. I'm the manager. I have five transactions to bring before you today. We have a multitude of variety of transactions today. Normally, we bring you acquisitions that are fee title or conservation easement. Today, we have several that are related to mitigation purposes or conversion, and I'll explain that a little bit later. We manage thousands of acres of property, and so in the process of granting encumbrances or allowing others to do activities on our land, we have to go back to that original funding source and get their permission to do that, and that's what results in a conversion. Before I get started in the actual transactions, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the process that we go through before we actually bring an acquisition to this commission. Our agency goes through extensive development of plans for species, habitat, wildlife, and fish, designing, developing what our needs are. Out of those planning processes come some priorities for where we need to expand or restore our habitat. So the steps that are involved in that scoping and need lead to ultimately a decision out in the region. We push this process annually called Lands 2020. It's a cross-program collaborative process where we ask folks to consider all these plans they've gone through and their priorities for acquiring new properties or doing some restoration, and then putting those forward through the Lands 2020 process, which results in a prioritization of those projects and funding. We can't do anything without the funds. It's all about the money. When we get to funding in place, we've applied for our grants, then we can actually move forward on a transaction. But it can't come before the commission until we've done our due diligence. Again, we cannot start any kind of activity transaction without the money. The first thing is to pull our title report and then order an appraisal. And that appraisal kicks off the bulk of the work that we're doing and our decision making. Those appraisals are generally required by our state or federal funding partners to be according to the USPAP standards, which is the national standards for appraisals. That's in statute that requires us to get that appraisal before we go out and conduct any kind of transaction on behalf of the state. We have to provide that landowner with a statement of just compensation. Where did that offer come from? Again, it's based on that appraisal. Our appraisal standards sometimes require us to go through a review appraisal, which is a second step. Many of our federal grants require us to take that appraisal after review and go back to that federal source and get their authorization before we proceed to make an offer. Some of the federal standards also require a yellow book, an appraisal, which is a little different type of standard. It's just a different bird, if you will, but it just causes a little more time to occur in the process of conducting that appraisal. When we contract for an appraisal, we have about 43 folks on our contract list for this biennium. We're just updating that contract now. We will put out a bid for appraisal. They will come back with a time and money to us, a response. We'll evaluate that. And then we'll select an appraiser and put out the assignment. Once we have the dollar amount back, we're able to go out to the landowner and make that offer to them. Once we have that offer and an option signed, we can come before you with a transaction. So that's kind of in a nutshell. I kind of whooshed through that. Okay, the first transaction that I have before you today is an acquisition on I-90 in Kittitas County. It's called the Spirit Wind Farm of Thorpe LLC acquisition. This is an acquisition that's a partnership with the BPA and the Yakima Nation. Part of their settlement accord was to provide some mitigation properties, and so this property was located about 15.4 acres, again, at the north end of our L.T. Murray wildlife area. The property has Tandem Creek crossing through it. The fence line that the owner has, the elk fencing, frequently is washed out with flooding and is just kind of a chronic issue there. By us acquiring the property, we're able to relocate that elk fencing to an area where it's stabilized and keep them off the highway. This is a major migration period or area for like a 10,000 animal herd moving through the area. And again, the location of the acquisition. The importance of the site, again, as I mentioned, Tanum Creek, it's critical habitat for listed mid-Columbia steelhead and important coho. But the primary purpose here is to get the elk, keep them off the highway for that migration area. The property will be managed within the L.T. Murray Wildlife Area. Operation and maintenance costs are estimated at $200 annually. The property will be acquired for the approved reviewed value of $260,000. The second property is the Whitford acquisition. It's considered the Liberty Bay unit. We made that one up. It's not adjacent to any of our wildlife areas, but it's a mitigation property, and I'll explain why we needed to get that property. So we're naming it adjacent to the geographical area where it's located on the east side of Liberty Bay. At the north end of the Kitsap Peninsula is the Point No Point boat launch that many of you have heard quite a bit about. We have an ongoing major restoration at that site. As part of the negotiations to get our permit acquired and discussions with the tribes, they required some additional mitigation. So we have gone out and spent some time locating additional properties. We needed 500 additional feet of shoreline in order to mitigate for the work they're doing at Point No Point. In March, we brought before you a transaction called the Logan transaction, and there were questions asked at that time about the Point No Point project. We since provided additional information to Commissioner Mankin, and I can give you a brief update on the Point No Point project. It's moving ahead. It's actually scheduled for completion and construction next summer. We have funding from the Minor Works Preservation Capital Budget that we're using for some of the mitigation properties, as well as Jobs Now funds. Some of those funds expire in a couple of weeks, but others have been hopefully reappropriated to continue the Point No Point project. But we are moving very quickly to try to acquire this mitigation and get the permits moving so we can keep that project on track. This property will be acquired through a conservation easement. We located the property. It has about 400 feet of shoreline that we'll be doing a major restoration project on. Again, we're purchasing a conservation easement from the landowner. A developer is coming in upland to put in several home sites. The strip that you see along the shoreline is non-buildable area anyway. So we came in and did our appraisal and offered a conservation easement so that there's no additional construction or docks or anything in that area. We're removing two bulkheads. We're recontouring the shoreline, put in some natural vegetation. There won't be public access because we don't own the property. We're just putting a CE on it in order to do our restoration, essentially, and then it counts as our mitigation. The third proposal is a conversion. We own property in Clark County. The Clark PUD needed to drill two underground water pipelines in order to provide potable water to Battleground and Ridgefield and some other rural areas. And because we purchased this property originally with RCO funding, they considered the disruption underground to be a conversion and essentially a devaluing of that property. An easement was conducted, and the PUD has provided equivalent valued property. Coincidentally, a little inholding right in our wildlife area that is similar value. So we're able to exchange an easement to them for their pipeline, satisfy RCO with buying this inholding. So it's an easement exchange for a little bit of land. The next transaction is another solution to a conversion. In 2005, King County needed to expand and provide a more safe approach to the Tolt River Bridge, and that approach happened to be on our property, which had been purchased with RCO funds. We devalued our property by, you know, putting more of a bridge approach. We took out some recreational access to the Snoqualmie River, so we were able to locate some property over the last 10 years. We did an appraisal and were turned down on some other property. The one we bring to you today is property just east of Sultan, right along the Wallace River in Snohomish County. But it provides recreational access to the Wallace River in an area where there's limited access. It's low bank. Folks can carry in their kayaks and rafts or fish from the shore. But again, it resolves the conversion in King County and solves that concern with RCO. There is highway access to the site. We won't be expanding it. Although it's totally appropriate for watchable wildlife, this is a great partnership opportunity for us. King County, as I say, did their bridge approach and conversion 10 years ago, and we've been looking for property to resolve that and get it finished. And in this case, King County had to come back and add some additional funds to complete this acquisition, as well as local sportsmen's groups have pitched in some money, and our agency's Watchable Wildlife Program gave us a small amount so that we can give more public access. The last transaction for you today, actually there's four. We have four surplus properties located in Skagit and Whatcom counties. These properties are determined to be surplus in a study the agency conducted almost 15 years ago, and the properties had been acquired in 1944 at a time when most Western states were acquiring funds to import Asian birds, pheasants, quail, and thought they could introduce them into the Western states and they would thrive and life would be good. Well, you know the story. In eastern Washington, life was good and those populations flourished in the wild. We had up to six, I understand, game farms around the state, and we've slowly closed all those in eastern Washington. We have one in Lewis County. In western Washington, not so good. The pheasants couldn't thrive just due to the climate and the lack of ongoing food source, and so we're down to the one game farm. We do pheasant releases, but the native population or the new populations have not been sustainable. So these properties have been languishing. They're not adjacent to current wildlife areas. We've declared them surplus, and we've gone through our hoops. These properties were purchased with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service funds, PR, so we had to go back to the feds and get their permission to dispose of the properties because they have their strings on them. That was a lengthy process. It enabled us then to go do an appraisal. Now our state statutes kick in and tell us if you offer them for surplus, you have to set a minimum bid at auction of the appraised value. So that's what we bring before you today is the appraised value for these four properties. The first two are in Skagit County. The first one is known, we purchased it from somebody named Borns, but it's a 7.5-acre property. All of these properties are located in agricultural districts, zoned agriculture, really committed in that area to keep them in agriculture. We've had a lot of interest from neighboring farms, so we anticipate those are the folks that we'll be marketing to. The highest and best use for property number one was agriculture, and it was minimum bid set by appraisal at $48,250. The second property in Skagit County, also a little over 7 acres. It's valued at, by appraisal, $88,000. Its highest and best use was a single-family residence. Excuse me, I jumped. The minimum bid for this 7 acres is $39,800, and it's still agricultural use. These all have legal access to them. The last two properties are in Whatcom County. Property three is nearly 10 acres, and it was valued at $88,000 as a single-family residence, even though it's within the agricultural district. They have a 1 in 40 zoning within that ag area. The final property, four, is a little over 13 acres. It was valued at $95,000. And again, rural residential, one home site is with the zoning on that one. At this time, the department recommends the commission approve these transactions, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Julie. Questions? Mr. Keeney.
Thank you, Chair Smith. I'm probably missing a lot of the land value knowledge. I need to ask this question, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of when I buy a horse, I pay $3,500 for it. When I go to sell that horse, I can get $100 for some reason. It seems like the pieces of property we're putting up for auction, the price is around $7,000 or $8,000 an acre, and the price that we're paying to acquire land is around $15,000-$20,000 an acre. And there's a lot of difference there, I know, in property values, but I'm assuming that's just a minimum bid. But it was just, it looked like really good farm ground in Whatcom County. I'm not questioning the number, but I'm just, it just seemed like it just, we pay a lot to get land, and people accuse us of it's, we're paying too much. And yet, and you know, just kind of, I'd just like you to address that a little bit. These are fair appraised values, I assume, and they seem reasonable to everyone, but we're paying more to purchase land or get easements than we're getting back from the land.
Let me take a stab at that one. These properties, again, are a small footprint within an agricultural community. So the appraisal goes out, and he looks at comps, what like properties have sold in the last couple of years, and sets that value. We have the obligation to get the best value for these properties because we need to turn around within 3 years, according to this fund source, and buy property for habitat, not just for pheasant. It could be for a number of upland game species. So when we take that appraised value, we'll do our marketing. By minimum, we have to place an ad in the paper. Well, we're going to beat the bushes a little bit. We're looking at Zillow doing some postings and generate some excitement for this. It will be a sealed bid auction in the fall. Even though there's a minimum bid, if folks want it bad, we expect there to be some competition for it. Property values, I can't even begin to discuss those. Depends on totally the area and every appraiser. It's an opinion of value, and you could get other appraisers to come in, and they might change that value somewhat. They'd probably still be in the same ballpark in these areas, again, because it's an agricultural area.
Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we incur any additional overhead burden, closing costs,
inspection?
Title companies. I mean, is there any outside burden that we have to absorb along with these sales?
Absolutely. Thank you for filling in what I forgot to say. There's a cost to surplusing our properties, which is why we don't do it very often. These properties have grant strings, and we don't have extra funds to process the title review, the environmental review, all the work that you named, in addition to the closing costs. The way we were able to do these surplus properties was with a small grant from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to kind of set us up, give us some seed money, if you will, to get going. We have 10 of these small pheasant parcels that we need to dispose of. And so these are the first four that we're pushing through and testing a new process. So definitely costs, and so that's why it's a slow process. Thank you.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the proposed lands transactions as presented.
Thank you. Motion to move it. Do we have a second?
I second.
Second by Commissioner Wecker. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. Motion carries. Thank you, Julie. Good timing.